Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Music from the ceremony that took place earlier today in the Sichuan province in China, commemorating the one-year anniversary of the earthquake that killed thousands. 5/12 has some of the same connotations in China now that 9/11 has here. James Fallows of The Atlantic magazine joins us now live from Beijing to talk about the lasting effects of that natural disaster, including the political effects, and how China is dealing with the economic disaster and the latest crisis, swine flu, around which they took some very questionable actions. James Fallows is the author of Postcards from Tomorrow Square, Reports from China. James Fallows, always great to have you on the show. Hello from New York.
Brian, hello from Beijing.
And James, China is not known for commemorating its bad times. How did the government observe today's anniversary?
The TV, you know, the newspapers had all special supplements on a year later. The TV programs are more or less blanketed from dawn to dusk with commemorative ceremonies and with outtakes of what things looked like a year ago and all the reconstruction efforts since then. And so it has been, I think that the comparison with 9/11 is an instructive one here. There's not the element of the foreign attack, obviously, and all the sort of military response, but otherwise you do have the sense of structured public mourning in the same way that the U.S. had.
We did a meticulous count of the dead in the United States, and it kept getting revised. Is there a good count of the dead and the homeless? Because homelessness, estimated in the millions, was also a huge impact of the earthquake. Is there a good accounting of the numbers?
There are accountings, and just in the last day or two, there's been an official release on the number of students or school children who were supposedly killed on that day, which I think was somewhere in the 5,300 range. It was a precise number, and I think the official number for total casualties is somewhere short of 100,000, probably in the 80,000 range. I think that there are two things worth bearing in mind. One is, for many, many things in China, anytime you hear a number, you know that it's wrong, just because the country is so sprawling and ways of counting people are so imprecise that you don't know. And if you see the areas where people disappeared, it's inconceivable that anybody would really know who was gone, because you had entire mountainsides coming down on villages and on schools. And so I think that people know it was a very, very heavy loss of life. And some people are more skeptical of the official numbers than others, but it was large scale, whatever it was.
9/11 was said to change the U.S. and its people, like that the sense of irony was over. I'm not sure that was true, but 9/11 certainly changed us in multiple ways. Is that the feeling in China, too, that gives 5/12 its resonance? And are there cultural changes that you can measure or observe?
Well, it may also be like 9/11 in this sense, too, which is that for a while, you had a sense that things really were different in China, in that, you know, all of the public machinery had been geared up to have the Olympics of last year, last August, be the signature event for China in 2008, which was an auspicious year because of the number 8, et cetera. But in fact, having the earthquake 3 months before the opening of the Olympics, I think that will be seen historically as a more important element for China. And certainly there was a spontaneity to the outpouring that wasn't the case of the Olympics. And I think that the couple of things which seemed for at least a few months to have a lasting effect were, you did have a sense of the nation genuinely pulling together, mourning together. There were collection booths wherever you went in the country. There were places for people to chip in money or have volunteerism, that which is notable because that's not a standard part of Chinese life, to have volunteer efforts for people. I think that the personality of the number two man leadership, Premier Wen Jiabao, it had a very significant change, because that day, that afternoon of the earthquake, he was on an airplane going out to the affected areas, and they as for the next couple of days, he was on the news all the time, being out there working with rescue teams. And that's not, again, the norm for sort of these technocratic leaders. And there was just some sense of pulling together as a nation, again, as after 9/11 in the U.S. I'm not sure how much of that is still here now, but it was for a number of months last year. It was quite a notable part of life in China.
James Fallows from The Atlantic, live from Beijing on this first anniversary of the earthquake in Sichuan Province, China. On what you were just saying, Chinese individuals and companies, from what I've read, have given charitable giving in ways that were never before seen. Have the newly rich Chinese business people continued to give? Is there a different sense of what philanthropy or charity means in China after the earthquake and in this economy?
I haven't seen any evidence that there's been a big lasting shift in the whole concept that people should benefit those to whom they don't have a direct connection. There, you know, there's a whole realm of anthropology and sociology about why it is the tradition of charity and philanthropy is not well established in China. And certainly, for a while last year, it took a step up. You saw just people who had almost no money themselves be putting their spare coins or spare little bills in these collection sites, which was very touching. And there was a somewhat less charming effort of public blog-driven rankings of famous people and rich people, seeing who had been most and least stingy or most and least generous, and pressure on people like Yao Ming and some of the movie stars to give a lot of money, pressure on companies to pony up. I think that probably is part of a slow process in having more of this public-spiritedness or abstract philanthropy in China, but I don't think many people would say a year later there's a large lasting difference that's evident yet.
And really, what a year for China between the earthquake, the economic earthquake, and the Olympics. They all have implications for how much of an open society China is and the basic question of what China is to its people and to the world. Have these things combined in any way as a historical force?
I think this has been, I'm biased by the fact that I've been in China for the last 3 years, therefore I think, boy, this is an interesting time for China. But if you start just at the beginning of last year, at the beginning of 2008, there was a surprise snowstorm early in the year, which was seen at the time as being a real problem because it kept people from going back to their home counties for the annual Spring Festival migration, which was quite a big deal. The government was seen as kind of Katrina-like mishandling that. Then there was the Olympic torch relays, which really were inflaming China's sense of victimization from the outside world, and that was kind of wiped away by the earthquake. Then we had the Olympics, and then we've had the economic reckoning and readjustment of the last 6 months, when probably tens of millions of people have lost their jobs and gone back to the countryside. So it has been quite a tumultuous time for China.
You know, we talk a lot about local government on this show, and you wrote that the earthquake revealed things to you about the Chinese system of local governments and the enormity of the task of governing a billion people. And from what I've heard and read and other Chinese people that I've talked to, the change, if there is political change happening in China, is really at the local level. There's a lot more local government responsiveness there in ways that there probably have to be because, you know, local problems are often so pressing, but that the central government in Beijing doesn't have to react to. Can you talk about what you learned regarding local government?
Right. And I think if there is a single thing that I wish I could plant in the minds of people in the U.S. or elsewhere who haven't been to China about how to think about the place, is it's usual and easy to think of it in the U.S. as one big centrally controlled totalitarian system where the state council or Hu Jintao says, go this way, and the whole country goes that way, as was the case under Chairman Mao. These days, it's not that way at all. That I would say in most ways, the central government in China is weaker in governing China than the federal government in the U.S. is in governing the U.S. And the vagaries of local mayors, local governors, the local branches of the armed forces, they can make a much bigger difference in how things turn out. So I was in my recent book, I was talking about how the earthquake had different effects in three different cities just because of the quality of the local governance there. There was one place where the local strongman had been very, very interested in safety and had insisted on all these earthquake-proof buildings, and nobody died there. And 10 miles away, all the kids were crushed because, you know, the local people were, the local building inspectors were on the take. And so I think if there were, if people recognized that there are 10,000 points of influence and points of change in China and a billion people, you know, sort of reacting to them, that's why it takes so long for things to change here, because they're happening in different ways all the time.
And progress in open journalism in China, which, you know, people were surprised at the beginning, right after the earthquake, how much openness the Chinese government was expressing toward reporters and letting the word get out, where they have actually in the past tamped down the details of disasters. If that openness is going to take hold, I gather it'll really take hold at the local level, town by town, city by city.
And yes, and also, and field by field. And openness for press reporting is one of the lagging indicators of Chinese openness in general. You know, financial openness is way far advanced on that. Compared to 20 years ago when I first came here, when everything was controlled, it is more open, but it's in a selective way. For example, just in the last two or three years, you can see that reporting on environmental issues is more tolerated than it was a couple of years ago. And the central government is seen as sort of smiling on efforts to show up local environmental disasters. Same for workplace safety and workers' rights type issues. And for a while, it seemed as if that kind of exposure of what went wrong in the earthquake and why you had some of these schools that just collapsed entirely when other buildings next to them were doing okay. There was a kind of Prague spring of open reporting on those things for a while. That seems to have been dialed back somewhat, and there's a lot of protest by some of the earthquake victim families about their not being able to get heard or to get recompense. So it's one of the slower areas of opening up, and it's a whole bunch of partial advances and partial retreats.
It's interesting. Was there a change of heart? Was there a central decision made that it was good to be open to journalism at in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake? And then a decision made that, oh, my God, look what this is doing. Look what people are saying.
I think probably there were hundreds of decisions in both of those directions at both of those stages. That probably in the beginning there was such it was such an overwhelming need to respond. And the immediate background was, again, this somewhat mishandled response to the huge spring snowfall, where it seemed that the government was sort of sitting on its hands. And so by response, or in by contrast, mm-hmm. Wen Jiabao was on right. The first plane out to Sichuan province to survey things, and you had the sense of wanting to shine as much light on everything that was happening there during time of national emergency. I think it was when the questions became a little bit too searching or right. awkward after that there seemed to be a close down.
Enough. And last thing, any openness doesn't seem to be apparent in the way they're handling the swine flu threat. I've read about Mexicans being held up in hotels, detained as they enter the country. I mean, there's been no swine flu in China, but they were detaining Mexicans just on the basis of being Mexican. Is that correct?
Yes, there was a time which now has ended, where it wasn't just people who had been in Mexico or had been exposed to somebody who might be sick, but who had Mexican passports who were being detained on that basis only. And the Mexican government was quite understandably upset at the Chinese government. That 7-day quarantine period has now passed. There's a new sort of wave of quarantine because a Chinese person who had been studying in the U.S. arrived 2 days ago and now has tested as having the flu. He's the first one in the mainland, and so they're tracking down everybody who was on that plane with him, or the connection in Tokyo, or taking the flight to Chengdu, or with him in a taxi, or whatever. So there's another roundup going on.
But they're not going to detain everyone with a U.S. passport.
So there was a time when they were detaining Canadians and Mexicans. I was saying, it's a big country right in the middle there, but that has not yet happened.
All right. James Fallows from The Atlantic magazine in Beijing. His book is Postcards from Tomorrow Square, Reports from China. And I figured out that he is the author of that book. James Fallows, thank you very much.
Brian, my pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're going to go back to the topic of health in a minute and give you an example of how health studies that appear in the press can be absolutely misleading and even encourage you to do the wrong things. Stay with us.